Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to The Rose, Rose Colombo, right here for you every Wednesday.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Yes, we're still alive and we want to stay alive. So be sure to take precautions and listen to the doctors and to all the medical staff who are giving you information on how to stay safe from the coronavirus. And don't do anything crazy like not take those precautions, and teach your children and your family what to do and your friends and neighbors, and create a safe community. If we create safe communities, then it won't spread, and that is the goal. Perhaps when we get the warm weather and summer comes along, then it will die out. Let's hope and pray that is the case. Because 660,000 or more Americans died from cancer last year. And over 1.1 million Americans died from the AIDS virus brought from Africa in 1981. And the government refused to call out an epidemic or a pandemic or a contagious disease with AIDS, and millions of people, millions died, especially in Africa, from AIDS, and people are still dying from AIDS because we have not heard of a cure, although there have been doctors, including one I met, who signed his book and told the story about his care for AIDS, but the government threatened him, he said, and he had to shut it down. So there's all kinds of scenes behind the curtain. We don't know what's going on behind the curtain or the real truth about the coronavirus. But the timing that it's a few months away from elections after President Trump knocked down the hammer on tariffs that were not paid to America for 25 years and access to the Long Beach port and so forth, and bringing jobs back from foreign nations and manufacturing companies so we can produce products of high quality made in the USA. May have caused a rift. Who knows? Although President Trump did the right thing. And there's rumors and allegations that there were Chinese spies. The first rumor and allegation that I read was there was a Chinese spy in the Canadian lab. And then there was another allegation that the Chinese spy stole the technology, the patent from the U.S. lab and transferred it to Wuhan Pharma Lab, and that it is allegedly released as a biochemical warfare weapon. So we'll see how it all plays out. We don't know, because in 2009, if you recall, President Obama called out a pandemic for the swine flu. him and Kathleen Sebelius, and he ordered every American to be vaccinated. And then a whistleblower came along, and a doctor online, I won't mention his name because that was a dangerous time, when they came out online and began posting not to be vaccinated because the swine flu vaccine had no short-term or long-term studies on the direct adverse health effects on human beings. And Obama mandated that everybody be vaccinated, and people were beginning to resist as this information began to pour out over the internet. And Obama stated that if Americans refused to get vaccinated, that they would go to jail for 1 year and be punished with a $1,000 fine. I don't think most Americans are paying attention, but I always pay attention. And I think words are important and what our government is doing. And then also he stated that if medical staff refused to get vaccinated, that they could be fired, and some people were fired because they refused to get vaccinated. And there were a lot of chemicals that the medical staff and the American people became aware of that could possibly have a direct adverse health effects on certain people, maybe not all people, but certain people. So that was the pandemic called out in 2009. And then, of course, it went away because there was really no epidemic or pandemic of the swine flu in 2009. So there you go. It was called fear-mongering and forcing people to become vaccinated with no long-term or short-term studies published for the American taxpayers who pay their wages to review for public scrutiny. And that takes away our freedom of choice. That took away our freedom of choice by mandating every American become vaccinated. Every American is different. Every American's immune system is different. Every American has a different age, ethnicity, race, genetics, health problems, health issues, and not everyone should be thrown into the big pot while the government turns up the fire on all of us frogs and bad things happen to good people. So on that note, enter into the world of authors and experts. And today we have a fantastic returning guest. He is an award-winning, an Irwin Award-winning author, G.L. Gooding. And he's written a fabulous book, Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls. And we're going to talk about that. And a second book is entitled Yell'em. And even though it has a tie to Christmas, the entire adventure story really happens almost exclusively outside of the Christmas holiday. So that's going to be interesting as well. And then when we leave the world of authors and experts in part two, we will return to Columbo's issues of the day. And today's issues will involve the coronavirus pandemic called out, and also the Border Patrol and illegal immigration and Chinese spies. So you won't want to miss this new information that I've come in contact with. And now we're going to take a break, and we're going to enter into a fabulous restaurant out in Benson, Arizona. So just close your eyes and imagine being there and eating this fabulous food out in a landmark restaurant where it also has been known to be haunted.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, It reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. You're listening to The Rose, Rose Colombo, right here at Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
And now we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts. And every Wednesday we have a very special guest. And today we have G.L. Gooding. His first name is Gary, so I will be calling him Gary. That's G.L. Gooding. He is an Irwin Award-winning author. Highly praised novels that have intriguing tie-ins to some popular stories that most of us already know. Of course, Gary's first book, Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls, has an unusual connection to the classic movie we all watch every year at Christmas. I watch it maybe two times at least. It's A Wonderful Life. And his second novel, Yell'em, or Yell'em, tells the untold backstory of the resilient donkey that carried Mary to Bethlehem. Both of Gary Gooding's books have Christmas ties, but neither of them are about Christmas. And that's what makes this so intriguing. So why don't we get started, because I'm anxious to talk to G.L. Gooding is his book name, but his first name is Gary. So let's get started and let's say hello to Gary. Hi, Gary. How are you today?
Fine. Thank you so much for having me back. Last time. So I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Yes, and you know, it's wonderful to have fun on the radio, on the podcast. It's fun to get to know people, not just to, you know, to sell a book, but also to allow our audience to get to know you, and that endears them to you as well, so they understand why you wrote your books. Right?
Right. Right. Absolutely.
You know, Gary, most people think that the book, Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls, is linked to a Christmas story, and I find it so interesting that it really doesn't do that. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about why you wrote Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls and its link to It's a Wonderful Life?
Well, I, like you, watched that movie and watched it all my life. I'm not a youngster anymore. And early on, I just had this nagging interest or desire to maybe think about what might have happened to those characters after the movie ends. Most people have seen it. I'm surprised sometimes when I run into people who haven't. But the story ends very uplifting and very joyous, but it leaves a lot of things unresolved that, being a realist, I'm always wondered what really happened when the dust settled and they came back to find out where the money went. That was a catalyst for the dramatic conclusion of the movie. So I picked that piece up, and Potter has always been Henry Potter, the antagonist in the story, has always been intriguing to me, mainly because he's probably the only character other than his silent assistant who isn't uplifted at the end of the movie. So it's always had a burning thought in the back of my head, and I started writing. And I think I may have described the last time we talked that it started out like a sculptor with a hunk of stone and a little concept about what you want it to turn out to be. And lo and behold, a couple of years later, it came out the way it did and surprise me.
Well, this is going to surprise everybody because no one really actually thought about a extension of the story, It's a Wonderful Life, but you. So that's fantastic. And your book is really a historical mystery, and it takes place after Christmas. So what was happening at that time in America?
Well, the movie ends at the very end of 1945, the end of World War II. We have a new president, relatively new president, with the death of Franklin Roosevelt. Truman's the new man in charge, which creates a lot of interest in some amazing events followed his path during his time in office. And it was an uncertain time, not because of the war anymore, but what was going to happen to all of the people coming back from that war? What were they going to face in terms of reentry into the work life? And so there were a lot of things hanging in the air, and yet it was still a much more a first half of the 20th century lifestyle and experience than after the 50s with the explosion of so many things that changed our lives, some in good ways, some in not so good ways. So it was an interesting time. And I think it was one of the things that helped to endure the movie to the audiences is so many, when it first got real exposure, those experiences of the war and the other difficulties in living life were as fresh in their minds.
True. That's a very good point. And, you know, what's interesting, too, is the movie also depicts that American life was a traditional family, traditional marriage, and the family unit and going to church and honoring God and all those. The standing up for the flag and the national anthem, despite the fact that many Americans lost family members, sons, husbands, and friends, and so forth during that war, Americans were honoring the military, and they were also so grateful to have their loved ones come home, and there was still that respect. So I really like the fact that you honed in on that. So what is the mystery, though, really about?
Well, I think that the book starts off fairly simply with someone who's investigating and trying to figure out what happened to the money and who was responsible. Of course, those who've seen the movie will know that truth. But they won't know how, unless they read the book, they won't know how it gets resolved or how it is brought around. Because one of the concerns, realities that I thought the Bailey family would face after that event is backlash about they lost $8,000 of our dollars. You know, we may have replaced it, but what happened to it and how can we trust them? So their integrity and their future was very much in doubt. Until and unless that mystery was solved. So that was kind of the first mystery, but that evolves us into a search and for other truths in the movie. And I appreciated you bringing up the family aspect because without giving away the plot too much, there's a truly family-oriented and the striving to be a family and to be together and put pieces back together after those years. It plays a significant role in the book, and I think in a very uplifting and positive way. So we learn about Potter's past. We learn about things that happened in his past that were contributed to his personality. We deal with some revelations about things that have happened into his past and lead up to how those influence the present. So, in essence, I think the book has at least four mysteries in it, all of them thankfully resolved by the end.
That's fantastic because The wonderful thing about these classic movies like It's a Wonderful Life is that they never die, because Americans, human beings, will always strive to have that family unit and those people they can trust around them and depend on, which is missing in today's society a lot in fast-paced big cities, I think. And not so much in the states where it's more farming and more small cities and people know each other and they help each other. I think that's missing. And I think these stories have endured millions and millions of people and even the younger generations because they yearn for that. And so your book, Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls, is going to be a wonderful, wonderful take on America, actually, even though it's a fictional story, but it has human interest, and these things do happen to human beings, so it's great. And so do we learn some secrets about your favorite characters in the movie?
Well, of course, the person that you'll learn the most about is Henry Potter, and why it was beyond just being in a wheelchair through some circumstance. We find out why he's in the wheelchair, and we find out, however, that there are many other elements in his life that tend to turn him into the dark and unhappy person that he is in the movie. We learn a lot more about George's past and history and evolution up to the present. And in fact, we learn things about him that he doesn't know. And then I think one of the things that the reader will learn or have some joy in is seeing how George, I try to present George with a little bit more dimension. You know, it's not always being the happy, jovial, positive person, that he's a human being and he's dealing with some real stressful times. And he manages them successfully, but not necessarily always well.
Yeah, and the other aspect to that original story, It's a Wonderful Life, is that God played a big part in their belief in God, and also the little angel. And so does that play any part, especially the little angel, in your book?
Absolutely, it's also one of the twists in the story, and it's not Clarence though. Clarence is in the background, but he's definitely. I think I continued that element in the end of the book that was in the movie, because you know, one besides being godlike, and it also helps us to have faith, to believe in things that we cannot necessarily see or feel, and often are put down or ridiculed. But that angel in that movie, the people who love that movie have to embrace the concept, or they wouldn't. It would be just too trite or too contrived for them. So I think that's an important part, and that's why it's in the book, or that element is in the book.
Fantastic. So I know that Fresh Snow is available in large print edition for people with vision issues. So changing the subject a little bit here, why is large print especially important to you?
Well, because when I started writing this book, in fact, right in the middle of writing it, I had some vision issues, but they became much more severe right in the middle of writing the book. I came very close to stopping the writing because it was just too difficult. Without getting into detail, I have blind spots in my eyes and sensitivity to light and dark, so I have a very limited field of vision in the light, and it's a struggle to see typewritten pages. But I was able to get help from an organization that's in Santa Rosa, California, called the Earl Baum Center, where they gave me a lot of technical support on about the computer and things I could do on my computer and help to getting better technology, bigger screens and so forth. And in the process of that, I met a lot of people with vision issues, many of them more severe than mine. And that was kind of a motivator just to take the book and create the large print version, not only for those people, but frankly, the older generation reading it becomes more difficult as we get older. And I know my mother, up to her passing, was always reading large print books. So that was the motivation.
That's fantastic. I think it's important because a lot of people who are elderly still like to read, but it is difficult to read the small print, you know, for many people, not just the elderly, but many people actually who have problems with their vision. So how does this vision challenge impact your writing?
Well,
is it difficult?
It makes it take longer. It take longer, and I'm still developing the skills to overcome some of those issues that I've mentioned. But thanks to updated equipment, I have a larger screen. I can blow things up. I still laugh at some of the things I read back because I think I typed them correctly, and my vision certainly didn't allow that to be the case. The best thing that I now do is I have the computer read my work back to me after I've gotten it to a point where I think it's reasonably good, and I just listen to the sound, and I can actually now pick out missing letters, wrong letters, things that are definitely not written as well as I would like them to be. So that has really helped to accelerate my ability to write. It's probably why I've written several other works since we last talked. So I'm working through it. I feel I got
well,
the gift from my mother.
Well, you don't have to think you're the only one, because I'll tell you, writing is it's very difficult to find your own errors in writing. And then, you know, you'll think it's great, and then you go back and you read it again, and you're like, oh, my God, I wrote that? I actually posted it, you know, and I have to redo the whole thing, you know. I'm like, oh, my God, they must think I'm an idiot out there, you know.
Right.
And because I'm a multitasker, too, so I'm always in a hurry. And
right.
I shouldn't do that.
Oh, you sound like a kindred spirit.
Sure I am. And so your second book, Yell'em, let's turn to that. It also has a tie to Christmas, but the entire adventure story really happens exclusively outside of the Christmas holiday. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. And it's very different than Fresh Snow. Obviously, starting with the fact that the main characters are all animals, so that's a major difference.
So it is a story about a donkey with a divine purpose, and it began creating for your son when he was a little boy. Is that right?
Yes.
That you began creating it for your son, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So how long is the book, and tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, it opens with the donkey being basically alone in the world and striving initially to survive, and along the way running into some people who weren't too kind to him, caring about him, and in order to survive, he kind of became callous resisted authority and control, and got a very bad opinion of humans and many of the other animals that he was required to associate as he made his travels in his early years. His life started to change when he met a dog and a camel, and together they complete a lengthy journey, part of it together, and then they're broken apart again and come back together at the conclusion. Along the way, I think hopefully the reader will learn, as Yalom the donkey learned, about forgiveness and acceptance and trusting again, and having that reinforced by having better things happen to him, and prepare him for that special job that he's got in store for him.
Oh, I love that story. That's fantastic. And so I heard also through the grapevine that you have two new books planned for later this year. And so why don't you tell us about that?
Well, Preshno is my first book, and I've always been a writer, but I haven't been an author very long. So I'm trying different genres and working on things that I've enjoyed reading. First one that's actually completed and it's in editing is a murder mystery. So it's definitely not around the Christmas season. And
although murders do happen then.
That's true.
Didn't get the right gift or something. Bad things can happen.
Yeah, I'm trying to write a book that puts together some interesting characters and a group of vagabonds who are searching for the meaning of life, per se, during the Vietnam era. I'm a Vietnam vet, so of that era. So,
thank you for your service.
You're welcome. Thank everyone for their service who's out there now, especially without having maybe the level of support they should. But I digress.
Exactly. I agree. 100%.
Anyway, this is the main character is a man who comes back from Vietnam with a lot of wounds and scars, and both at home and away, and decides to go on a road trip. A bunch of his friends work their way in to the trip, and they end up with a plan to go out and spend chunks of time, half years, in different parts of the country, and just live, get part-time jobs, do that kind of thing. And first place they land, son of a gun, this guy ends up helping to investigate, along with his friends, help investigate a string of murders associated with events in this small town from the past. He happens to be a former military policeman, so he has some investigatory skills. But the story, from my perspective, my goal was to write a story where you have a lot of good character interaction. I have a sense of humor, so I'm trying to, put some humor into it, but at the same time, write intriguing story. And that's the book that's should be out next. I hope it's a series, because I'm partway into the second one already. So
sounds exciting.
From your lips to God's ears.
It sounds exciting and thrilling, and like a TV series for sure. Mm-hmm. And so now that we come to the end of our interview, which I've thoroughly enjoyed, and our audience has too, I'm certain. How do they find you online? Do you have a video? Do you have a website? Or how do they purchase your books? It's a Wonderful Life and Yalom. And also, any message you'd like to give to our audience is fine, about yourself or your books.
Well, they can reach me at glgooding.com. That's glgooding, G-O-O-D-I-N-G, .com. They can go there and they can see the book trailer for Fresh Snow, which has had just short of 140,000 views by the audience out there, and they can get the books and get more information about what's coming. And the last message I have, because I talk too much, is my last book that I just completed a draft of is near and dear to my heart. Hopefully someday we'll get a chance to talk more about it, Rose. I call it, the working title is Mother's Story, and it's the story of my 103-year-old mother's life. It's a novel, not a biography, but it's a whole bunch of information about what it was like to grow up in a rural community back when there was no electricity, no power, not much, no safety net. and how she rose above it. So that I'm proud of to be pushing forward soon.
Fantastic. And so can your books be bought on Amazon or on a website? How do you sell your books?
It can be bought both Yalom and Fresh Snow can be bought on Amazon. Amazon, the large print of the Fresh Snow is available there. And as these other works come out, they will be there as well.
Fantastic. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, G. Al Gooding, Gary Gooding.
Oh.
And I look forward to talking to you about your new books as well in the future, very soon, perhaps.
Well, and I would love that. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. You take care. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And G.L. Gooding has left the building. And what a fabulous person. And he served our country, and he was a Vietnam vet. And he has a vision challenge, and he didn't just accept it. He used it to his advantage, learned how to work and do the passion he loves, which is writing novels. Become an award-winning author, Irwin Award-winning author, amazing. And now he has books on Amazon for you to buy, Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls, and Yellum, that's spelled Y-E-L-L, let's see, hold on a second here, yeah, Y-E-L-L-U-M, like Mary, Yellum. And you won't be sorry if you go check out these books, and if you love to read, you will definitely enjoy G.L. Gooding's wonderful novels. And on that note, we're going to leave Authors and Experts, the world of authors and experts, which we enjoy bringing on very special guests every Wednesday. And then we enter into part two, which is the world of politics and the issues of the day. So don't touch that dial, because we will be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, because now we enter into the world of politics. And there is an intriguing article on Newsweek by Greg Price. It was published on February 14, 2018. And I thought it was interesting because, guess what? China's in the news, and so is the coronavirus, and so are spies. So how long ago did our government actually know that some congressional members were hiring Chinese spies, and some persons and professors in universities were taking bribes from Chinese spies? It says, China has spies across the United States, universities, and FBI is constantly monitoring them, Director Ray says. This was published in 2018. And this has been going on for about, I'd say since the Clintons took office in about 1993, when they got in bed with communist China and tried to give away our Long Beach Naval Base and the port and allow them to come and go through international waters as they please into the USA and tariff-free. So for 25 years, China had it made until President Trump came along and said, hey, wait a minute. How are the American taxpayers benefiting? How are the American people benefiting from this NAFTA deal? We weren't. So anyway, it goes on to say Chinese intelligence operators are littered across U.S. universities, possibly to obtain information on fields like technology, maybe technology such as how to create a biochemical warfare weapon. Schools have little understanding of this major predicament, FBI Director Christopher Wray said Tuesday. So Christopher Wray was aware of this for a long time. So why did the Chinese spy, who the American people paid taxpayer wages to for 25 years, hired by Senator Dianne Feinstein, remain in that position for 25 years? And now it's alleged online in many articles that we are also paying his U.S. taxpayer-funded pension. So we're paying spies, Chinese spies. We paid the Awan brothers, the Pakistani spies for Iran and Pakistan, hundreds of thousands of dollars per year to hack into the computers of the Democrat Party, which, in my opinion, is espionage. But that's just my opinion. And what did they get? A slap on the wrist? Slap on the hand and told to go back home? Or are they still here? Who the heck knows? They swept that scandal away. All these scandals get swept away. And the American people are still paying these people. We're paying to be spied on. We're paying for spies from foreign enemy nations to infiltrate into our government and our universities. And that's a fact. And it's been going on for a long time. Who's taking the bribes? So speaking before the Senate Intelligence Committee, Wray warned about possible operatives at the nation's highest learning centers who occupy various positions like professors, scientists, students, according to McClatchy, D.C. Now, I was just called out on LinkedIn by a gentleman who verbally attacked me and said that I should believe the scientists and that I didn't know what I was talking about because I was not accepting information from the scientists. Well, not all people with titles are correct. Wray said the FBI is also monitoring academies with universities that are sponsored by the Chinese government. Though, he said, such institutions seem unaware of who could be spying on their campuses. I think the level of being naive on the part of the academic sector about this creates its own issues, Wray said. They're exploiting the very open research and development environment that we have, which we all reserve, but they're taking advantage of it. The article goes on to say that across the country, there are reportedly some 350,000 Chinese students enrolled at American universities, or 35% of the 1 million foreign students in the country, according to McClatchy. I think we have more foreigners in our universities from foreign enemy nations than we do Americans, because Americans can't afford to go to school at these prestigious universities unless they want to get stuck with a $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 bill. But we're funding illegals and foreign enemy students, not all but some, and foreign students from foreign nations, both friendly and enemy nations, with our tax dollars, and we can't afford to put our own kids through school, through universities and colleges. How is that? Why is that? Why? Why is the government making us do this? Yet the government will never answer, will they? They'll never answer these questions. Why are they doing this? And why aren't these students vetted and their connections? It's very possible that we have more than we know who are spying. Why would they trust communist countries, socialist countries? Why? Muslim Brotherhood care countries, when their goal is to wipe out Israel and Western civilization, which is their written and stated strategic goal, to wipe out Western civilization and invade, infiltrate, overpopulate, and dominate all of the world and force people to comply with their ideologies. Why has our own government been funding foreign enemy nations and harboring and aiding and materially assisting illegals? Illegal means illegal, and if you look it up in the law book, it means someone committed a crime. And harboring, aiding, and abetting and material assisting criminals is a crime, and yet they release them from our prisons. They're releasing felons, they're releasing murderers, rapists, pedophiles, cartel members, gang members, traffickers, terrorists, jihadists, and migrating them into our country through open borders and tying the hands of Border Patrol for those 10 years under the Obama regime. Anyway, the article goes on to say, Ray stated the U.S. innovative culture was one reason for why China was trying to penetrate the country's top schools. Well, if they knew all this, why was it allowed to continue? Because America is the land of innovation, there's a lot of very exciting stuff that's happening in terms of smaller startup companies, Ray said. Wow, we're just allowing communist China to come along and the Middle East and infiltrate and hack into our computers and spy and steal technology and outsource our jobs and manufacturing companies. Why? How is that benefiting, and how has it benefited the American people to open those borders when those traffickers are dangerous? They kidnap babies, children, and young girls. And we're told to shut up and be silent about it all. We're told to shut up, that we're being offensive. This is hate speech to call out crimes. I bet our framers and our grandparents and great-grandparents and all those who fought for this country are rolling over in their graves. They've gone before us. He added that a certain unfamiliarity with China's attempts has left universities to open, like the borders, open borders, open to such counterintelligence work, but that educating the educators could prove useful. This is so insane. I can't even believe I'm reading this. Quote, I think the private sector is not used to spotting this. And so a lot of it is trying to educate them about what to be on the lookout for. He said, what happened to vetting? Don't we have quotas anymore? Don't we vet people who are entering our country? Oh, no, we have open borders. They bypass Border Patrol. They bypass legal inspections required by law. They bypass ports of entry, legal ports of entry required by law. But if you go to the airport, the same thing happens. TSA, naked X-rays Americans, searches us, questions us, makes us show all our ID, pats down our hair, pats down our bodies, and treats us like the criminals, even though we're born in this country, and we pay their wages. And we are not criminals. And we own this land. And yet we're treated like we are the enemy. Well, all of those foreigners walk across our borders, or Obama flew them into our country without any legal inspections, without proper vetting, without proper ID, passports, driver's license, and probably many fake ones as well. This is China. This is 50 countries of the Middle East, especially Somalia, Palestine, Iran, Saudi. And then we've got Russians and then we've got down south, Central America, South America, where very dangerous gangs, very dangerous. None of these people, jihadists, terrorists, gangs, felons, have a conscience. They're sociopaths, for the most part, who are committing these crimes. Innocent babies, children, human organ harvesting, selling children for $30,000 a pop, bringing in opioids to destroy the minds of the young people and the foolish adults who take opioids and buy illicit drugs. Then we have Big Pharma, who is creating all these excessive drugs and opioids, and doctors are passing them out like candy. I mean, seriously, there's a problem with this, with our government. Ray sat before the committee along with other top members of the U.S. intelligence community, including Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats and CIA Director Mike Pompeo. I really like Mike Pompeo. I think he's a really strong, patriotic American who is determined to uphold the Constitution. The panel also explained how Russia was already actively meddling in the 2018 midterm election, much like it did in 2016. What about 2008? I was at a polling place where the ballots were slipping and punching Obama, and people were calling out, "My God, my ballot slipped, it punched the wrong person, da 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 da," and they were all upset. Nobody knew what to do. So you know what they did? Nothing. So people voted for the wrong person and had no choice. It was too late. So we have rigged electronic machines back in 2008. So it probably happened again and again, 2012, 2016. Maybe it'll happen in 2020. But there is, and you can Google it, a congressional record where the developer of the software for the voting, the electronic voting machines, testified under oath that, yes, the voting machines can be rigged. Well, not only can they have been. So do we have fair elections any longer with illegals voting? How can illegals vote? How can they hand them out a driver's license and call it legal? That's an illegal driver's license handed to an illegal person so they can illegally vote. That's what the Democrats' mindset is at. And if you talk about it, you're racist, you're offensive, you hater. I mean, no, it's the law. It's a constitutional federal law. We can't go to another country and vote. We can't walk across their borders. We'll get shot, executed, tortured, raped, thrown into a hellhole. You can't do any of these things in those countries, and yet they come here and they complain. They complain about our country. They say they were promised, like Omar did, and on video said that they were promised new cars, new houses, the lifestyle of a princess, I suppose, paid by the American people. Well, what they're doing is they're wiping out the middle class. They're overtaxing us. They're overregulating us. They're strangling us. They're imposing unconstitutional mandates on us. Obamacare is unconstitutional. I wrote the first blog. It was read in part on the House floor with my name on the record. I said it borders on extortion. They're taking our right to choose what we can buy with our own earnings after taxes. It's like an imaginary gun to our heads. Pay up or else be punished. Sign up or else be punished. Get vaccinated or else be punished. What happened to this country? This is not the country I was born in and grew up in. And neither were you. Shame on us Americans for allowing this to happen to our country. And then there's Border Patrol. Hats off to the Border Patrol and to President Trump. Border Patrol will deploy elite tactical agents to sanctuary cities. Oh, please do. Agents from a special tactical team that normally confronts smugglers on the border are being sent to sanctuary cities across the country. Thank you, President Trump. The Trump administration is deploying law enforcement tactical units from the southern border as part of a supercharged arrest operation in sanctuary cities across the country, an escalation in the president's battle against localities that refuse to participate in immigration enforcement. This is from the New York Times by Caitlin Dickerson and Zolan Kanon Young, and you can look it up online. I want to say that how is it that the Democrat governors and anyone else who supports these agendas of sanctuary states, tent cities, poop cities, and that are spreading diseases and causing fear of the residents who live in those areas, if their property values go down, their businesses go down, tourism goes down, because there's druggies all over the damn city, and there's needles and poop, and you're watching people poop on the streets like we're a third world nation. That's what they do in those countries, not in this country. What is wrong with people like Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, Maxine Waters, Adam Schiff, Kamala Harris, Newsom, and former Governor Brown, who allowed San Francisco to go from the golden state to the poop state, filled with disease, rats, typhoid, who knows what else. And now we have the coronavirus. How easily will that spread? Very easily in California, with these tent cities all along our beautiful coast. What is wrong with them? They aren't paid to aid and abet and harbor and materially assist unidentified foreigners in our country or enemies in our country or spies or felons, cartels, gang members, jihadists, and terrorists. And yet they're getting away with it. Shame on our government. If you were to break any of these laws, you'd be put in jail. CNBC says World Health Organization declares the coronavirus outbreak a global pandemic. The World Health Organization declared a global pandemic as the coronavirus rapidly spreads across the world. We deeply are concerned both by the alarming levels of spread and severity and by the alarming levels of inaction, the WHO's chief said. WHO officials have been reluctant to make such a declaration. Declaring a pandemic is charged with major political and economic ramifications, global health experts said. Well, I want to say that Obama declared a pandemic in 2009, him and Kathleen Sebelius, and they wanted and mandated everyone be vaccinated with a series of chemicals in the vaccine with no long-term or short-term studies, as reported by the whistleblower. I haven't heard about the whistleblower ever since. I don't know what happened to her. But it does make you wonder. And that came with punishment if you refused. Well, there are other pandemics like the swine flu in the 70s that they mandated those vaccinations, and people became paralyzed or died, and it ended up that the family members of victims ended up, or the victims ended up filing lawsuits against the government, claiming that the swine flu vaccine was 100% safe, and so did MSM. So it's very difficult to know if the government is telling the truth or if they have a hidden agenda like microchips so they can control the masses. They would have to mandate that vaccine. They would have to mandate. How would you know if they inserted that microchip? You wouldn't. But in the Bible, I just want to warn you, in the book of Revelations, it warns not to take that microchip because it will cause sores. It will cause problems, health problems for you. And you will be enslaved by the beast, 666. Believe it or not. The Bible doesn't lie, neither does God. So on that note, I just want to say God bless you. God bless our military, our veterans, our president. Thank God for President Trump. Keep him safe and protected and healthy. And you protect yourselves too, because we live in a modern country. We don't live in those third world countries. I've been in those countries. They do not have the same technology, the same sanitary conditions, the same treatments, the same access to products and clinics and hospitals and modern medicine and so forth, and natural herbs and vitamins, that alcohol, 70% alcohol, hydrogen peroxide, all these things that we have access to, vitamins, supplements, to help keep us safe and sterile and our hands sterile. And our immune system strong. It's up to us to be proactive. Don't expect the government to come and help you out. You need to be proactive for you, your family, and your community. And if everybody is proactive in this beautiful country, we can restore it. We can help President Trump restore America. And we can have legal Americans in our country who love our country, who love being an American, who will work, who will pay taxes to help preserve this nation, who will oppose the taxpayer-funded mandated abortions that are depopulating the natural-born Americans, 70 million plus, 345,000 killed by abortionists at Planned Parenthood in just 2019, that are not with us today and will not be here to help preserve the future of this nation. This nation needs natural-born babies in order to preserve America. That's why we're called Americans. That's why this is called America. And we are commanded by God and by the framers to preserve this blessed nation of plenty for natural-born Americans who allow naturalized Americans to live in our country, but only naturalized Americans can be deported, and illegals and radicals and jihadists and cartel and gang members from other countries. America's natural-born Americans who are innate to this country, soil, can never be deported. And that, along with you must be a natural-born American, born to two legal Americans on U.S. soil, is the only person eligible to be a president of the United States, but they can be slipped in by evil ones who seek to destroy our country and to overthrow our country. We're not immune to any of it. So God bless you. God bless the United States of America. And I hope we remain free and that our liberty and our rights remain intact, because we're the last. We're the last hope for those who are suppressed, depressed, oppressed, under authoritarian law, being starved, with no clean water, no food, no necessities of life, including shoes and clothing, because of the tyrannical evil leaders. God bless you.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.